All right, welcome to our Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast. But of course, we do lots of sports, all sports, and right now it's baseball. So this is why we have Bob Nightingale, USA Today, big time insider for baseball. Lots of baseball injuries, very good time with the start of baseball season to talk some baseball here. Bob, welcome to the show again. It's been, what, a year and a half or so, almost 2 years, so it's been too long.
Yeah, great to see you, Knocker.
Yeah, we were looking over. We were just talking when we got on. Last time, the big topic was Tatis and his wrist and other things. That's how long ago that was. But we'll get back into all that. So let's get into it here. The season is kicked off early on, and injuries are the headline. Let's just start with your take, since we do talk about injuries, with the injury controversy, especially with pitchers, the pitch clock. What's your insider information and insight into what's going on there, especially with the recent news, Spencer Strider and Bieber, et cetera?
Yeah, well, I think it's just a case where these guys try to throw max velocity to get big contracts. If they blow out, they blow out. And that's what's happening. I mean, your arm's not, you know, meant to throw 100 miles an hour every single time. You know, rear back and use it once in a while, but not every pitch. You know, it's like, you know, redlining in a car. It just, you know, there's no drop-off. You see guys like Noah Syndergaard, you know, never had the career he should have had. So I don't think it has anything to do with the pitch clock or any of that. I just think it's guys training to throw as hard as they can and not really caring if they blow out. You know, sure, they want to stay healthy. But too many people are saying, you know what, I'll take the money, and even if I have Tommy John surgery 2-3 years later.
Yeah, and obviously that's the big structural difference between baseball, let's say, and football, right? There's guaranteed contracts, right, in terms of you get the money, you get the money. I mean, I think I just saw over the weekend the news of a San Diego kid, Steven Strasburg, who's now, I guess, officially retired and still going to – I think he pitched maybe only 30 innings of his new big contract, and he's still going to get all the money.
Yeah, I mean, his contract wasn't even insured, so Nationals, you know, on the hook for the full $245 million. Yeah, never was the same. So, but, yeah, I mean, just a – you know, they have these performance centers, you know, like Driveline in different places. They, you know, kind of stress as far as, you know, building the velocity up. And that you saw that with Shane Bieber. He was at the place in Scottsdale in winter, you know, boosted his velocity up a couple miles an hour. And then, you know, boom, he pitched lights out his first two starts and blew out. You know, now he's out for next year and a half. So, you know, and we're seeing it too with kids, high school kids are getting Tommy John surgery now. It's just, I think these kids are throwing way too much, way too early in life.
All right, you mentioned something about insurance, and the Nationals didn't insure it. So maybe, I don't know if you know this, but are almost all teams insure them? And how much does a $245 million insurance policy cost? Because I think it has to be a pretty high number, right?
Yeah, very high number. And he had injuries in the past. You know, we saw that this past a year ago, Clayton Kershaw. He could not get insurance for his back. And so he did not pitch the World Baseball Classic, you know, in case he got hurt there. It would not be insured. So that's the only reason he didn't pitch. So, yeah, a lot of these guys, you know, insure them early on in their careers. But later on, particularly if there are some past injuries, you know, you can't do it. So more guys are uninsured than you think.
All right. So you're saying the pitch clock has nothing to do with it. And I would tend to agree with you from a medical perspective, and we can talk about that. So what's Tony Clark and the players union doing?
Well, I think they were concerned with, you know, injuries in recent years, and he's still upset that they cut off 2 seconds on the clock if runners are on base. But, you know, that you started that this year, and obviously, you know, it's, you know, those guys didn't get hurt, you know, after, you know, one start because of that. It's been going on. I mean, truth be told, there were more injuries 2 years ago than there are now, but it's just been building over the last 10 years. So I think it's just more of an upset that they, you know, changed the pitch clock, you know, again, after just doing it a year ago.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the pitch clock measures when you start your motion. So it's not like making someone get a ball out of the hand super quick and changing their wind up, right? I mean, once you start, so that shouldn't affect injuries. And if it really were the pitch clock, you might see this later in the season, right? In terms of buildup. And these are early. And the other thing I'd say is I'll share you a football analogy and see if you agree with this. Our team used to say, oh, this is a good injury week. I'm like, yeah, but we had seven players go down. And the next week, oh, it's a bad injury week. Why? Because Antonio Gates or LaDainian Tomlinson got hurt, right? So when it's Spencer Strider and Bieber, it's a big news, right? When it's the long reliever, you know, the middle reliever that blows out his elbow for a Tommy John, people kind of shrug. So I think it a lot of it is just bias related to the names of the receivers, the pitchers. I mean, the fact that Gerrit Cole has been injured and Strider now, Bieber and all these guys. And it's the name players that I think we follow. And I think that's where the impression is that this is this incredible, all of a sudden changing epidemic, where really, I think you're right, it's a long going story. And I always say that I don't care if you throw 100 miles an hour, your ulnar collateral ligament is no bigger than mine, and I can't throw any miles an hour, you know. And your ulnar collateral ligament is the same as, you say, redlining in a car. And I've used that analogy. And part of it not only is just velocity and the number of pitches, I think it's the emphasis on spin rate and getting people out as opposed to pitching to contact for ground balls and getting out of innings. It's more about the strikeouts, and which then is not only velocity but spin rate, which then torques the elbow even more.
Yeah, and I know Tyler Glasnow on the Dodgers that has brought this up in the past, where using the sticky stuff as they did, which was illegal, you don't have to grip the ball as hard. Now without that stuff, you're gripping the ball harder and maybe putting more stress on your elbow that way as well. Baseball still can't come up with some kind of tackiness on a baseball, uniform tackiness to prevent that. And so I think guys are gripping the ball much harder and, trying to throw harder and better spin rate, and you're getting hurt me because of it.
Do you see a situation where a certain type of sticky substance would become legal?
They're trying. I mean, there's a different tackiness in the balls used in Japan, Japanese professional baseball, that seems to be working. They use a smaller baseball as well. So, they've been trying to do something, and so far they're almost back at square one. They just can't seem to come up with one.
Okay, so where is this going to end up? Any changes that you see coming for this season or otherwise, or long term or short term, or where is this story going to end?
Well, I think it's got to end where, Major League Baseball, college programs, youth programs don't keep stressing, "Hey, throw as hard as you can." And these kids are getting drafted. Greg Maddux, who's in the Hall of Fame, says, "If I was a high school kid now, I never would have got drafted, because he wasn't throwing, 95 miles an hour, that sort of thing." So I think too, these performance centers, don't go there just to increase your velocity. If you want to become better, do it. But yet, I think just kind of de-emphasize velocity. Hey, if you're throwing strikes and can paint the corners, I'll take 91 miles an hour over 101 miles an hour.
No, well, no question. I mean, let me tell you, my son, who's 11, so he plays this Bronco Pony League baseball. It's like Little League. And there was a parent on the opposing team that had a radar gun. And that was the rage of all the parents. They wanted, how fast did that kid throw? How fast did that kid throw? Right? I mean, it was interesting to me. So yeah, there's no question. And then you made a comment earlier that I think is very true, that max effort or near max effort throws. And I can't emphasize enough how, you know, well, how is it possible that Brock Purdy can come back from his ulnar collateral ligament surgery so quickly, yet pitchers can't? I mean, it's a year and a half, et cetera. Part of it is the high velocity, high effort throws, and the pitching mound makes a big difference. And part of it was the surgery for most major league players when you have an omoplatyl is it's an attenuated ligament and you need a reconstruction, whereas Brock Purdy was an acute injury and it was a repair as opposed to reconstruction. But also, football quarterbacks in an NFL game where, let's say, they throw the ball 40 times, maybe only 10% of their throws are max velocity or near max velocity, tight window, deep shot downfield, where you're really throwing it as hard as, almost as hard as you can. And that's just not the case in baseball, right? It's almost every pitch that you're coming downhill and throwing hard. So I think that's some of the differences as well.
Yeah, and you see position players come back a lot quicker, you know, like Manny Machado, and you're not good Woods, you know, close to coming back, you know, from his elbow surgery. But you're right. I mean, even Shohei Ohtani, he can't pitch for a year, but he's certainly hitting, and he's already, you know, trying a throwing program.
Yeah, and hitting is a completely different story, and that's to be understood in terms of the ulnar collateral. It just doesn't put the same stress on it. So I've said, Spencer Strider, that surgery, okay, I was hopeful that the MRI would show nothing and he'd be okay. But once there was, quote, damage and then a sprain to the ulnar collateral, and a sprain is a tear, even partial, it's still a tear. I mean, he's had this first Tommy John surgery in 2019. Now here we are with, quote, damage and a sprain. Unfortunately, from my perspective, Tommy John, a second Tommy John surgery is at this point inevitable and a matter, he's 25, it's inevitable and a matter of when, not if. Is it this week, next week, next month, next season? But it's coming. What's your intel on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely coming. You don't see, you know, the Dr. Meister, you know, without thinking you're going to come out of there without having surgery. I mean, they could try to, you know, do an injection and see what happens, you know, and see if you get away with it for 2 months. Because now you're talking about if he needs nerve surgery, you know, he may not be back until 2026 or late in the 2025 season. The other thing to consider is his success rate for the first time Tommy John patients is about, you know, 90-95%. Drops down about 50% second time around. So we'll see what happens here. You know, maybe they'll say, can we get away from it, you know, right now and see, but eventually it's going to happen.
Yeah. You know, in my impression, just so you know, that this whole Tommy John's worked great. And I've even had patients say, well, let me just do the Tommy John right now so I won't have to deal with it. I mean, it doesn't work that way. Right. And yeah, I would say 95% success rate on Tommy John's is probably a tad high. You're selecting a population, but I also believe that the revision or second Tommy John success rate at 50% is probably a tad low. And the reason why is historically you don't have your second Tommy John until you're, you know, late in your career if you do. But now that we have kids like Spencer Strider having it as teenagers, I think that 50% rate of return and recovery will probably rise some, and that's good, but it's never going to get up into the 90s, but it should be higher than 50 in my impression.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting too. Someone did a study that all the major league pitchers, 37% of them have had Tommy John surgery at one point in their lives.
Yeah. And what's interesting is they'll give statistics about how many football players or running backs have ACL surgery. But remember, you got two ACLs here. It's just one Tommy. Well, technically you got two ulnar collateral ligaments, but you don't need your non-throwing arm one. And if you're not a pitcher or a thrower, you don't, quote, need your ulnar collateral ligament or Tommy John ligament to function. And so, yeah, it's definitely an interesting deal. What's the latest on Trevor's story? I mean, by video, when he went down, we said, okay, that's a dislocated shoulder. I think that's been confirmed now. What's his status going to be in return? What are you hearing or thinking?
I mean, it sounds like it's probably going to be out for the year. Yeah, if it's not out for the year, come back late in the season. Just the way he talked, the way they're describing it. It's not like popping your shoulder back in place and you're back in 2 weeks. The way he sounded, that was very serious. And you know, he couldn't even answer the question whether, you know, do you expect to be back, you know, this year? So I think it's going to be out for several months, if not the entire season.
Right. And obviously don't be fooled by the 15-day IL. That's just the starting point, because that gets converted to 60 or season, et cetera. And the analogy here, obviously being in San Diego, is what I said all along about Tatis. It was inevitable that he would have shoulder surgery, and he kept playing through it. Okay, I'm not going to dive anymore. I'm not going to take my top hand off the bat and follow through. No more, you know, head first slides and this, that, the other. And his shoulder still kept coming out. And now the best thing probably to happen to him related to the suspension was that he finally got his shoulder fixed, right? And kind of deal. And, you know, Trevor Story, I get it. It's his non-throwing arm, but when you dislocate your shoulder, you almost inevitably tear the labrum, and a high risk of redislocation in terms of what's happening.
Yeah, I remember, you know, he didn't get the contract he wanted to out of Colorado because people kind of feared they had an elbow injury. He wasn't getting the same velocity on you know, throwing to first base. So he's had a little bit of a history now of injuries. And sure enough, since he signed with the Red Sox, you know, he's been hurt, you know, early on, and it keeps happening.
Yeah, yeah. And there have been a slew of injuries this last week, unfortunately. You think, you know, not just to the pitchers that we talked about in Trevor Story, but, you know, a few other guys, et cetera. You think there's any just happenstance, start of the season, athletes bigger, faster, stronger, any sort of correlation to anything that you see or people are talking about?
Yeah, nothing like they can, you know, put my finger on. I mean, you know, the spring training is the same, you know, length. It wasn't like, you know, can't blame this on the World Baseball Classic or anything like that. Can't blame it on a lockout. It's just happening. You know, some of these plays are fluke plays too. So, you know, I know the season's so long, but certainly can't blame it. Not like these injuries are happening in September. They're happening right now.
But yeah, early. Royce Lewis in his quad, and the White Sox guy with his hip flexor. I mean, there's quite an...
He had the same thing last year, Luis Robert. You know, Lewis has been hurt, you know, a lot since he joined the Twins. So a lot of the times, it's just there's a history of injuries, and they're popping up again.
Yeah. What'd you make of Ozzie Guillen's comment?
You know, I mean, it's true in the sense where, you know, probably more toward the pitchers. You know, pitchers were big and heavy and didn't care. They weren't, you know, in the weight room. And they were, you know, pitching their entire careers without getting hurt. So I think there is something to that, you know, where, but I think his point is that it's probably better, you know, sitting on your couch eating some potato chips than spending, you know, 8 hours a day in the gym and trying to get yourself, you know, perfectly fit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, essentially, the way I'd look at it is the more fit you are, the higher you redline or rev the car engine, the more that you use high octane fuel, the faster the car goes and the more potential breakdown. And look, if you're not stressing your muscles, tendons, and other ligaments at max velocity or strength or force, maybe you do have a less chance of causing an injury. But I thought his comment was pretty interesting. And entertaining, at least, as always, Ozzie.
Right.
So for people that know, he said, you can't, what was the quote again? You can't, what was it, Jake?
Can't strain fat, or you can't pull fat.
You can't pull fat. Yeah. Well, that's technically true. I mean, you have to pull muscle and tendons and ligaments, et cetera. That's technically true. But only
John Kruk, the former Padre, used to say the same thing. Remember how big he was? He might have been the first one to originate that line.
But Ozzie might be the only one nowadays who can get away with that line. What's up next on your radar screen? What's next for baseball here? What stories are you working on? What news are you trying to break, et cetera?
Well, sort of the biggest news still is the Dodgers, you know, spent $1.1 billion in free agents contracts. And the big news, of course, is what happens with the Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter, you know, with the illegal bookmaking operation. So baseball has not found anything ties to baseball as far as gambling, you know, even with the interpreter, there's been no ties to that. If there are, then there's some big time problems. But right now, I think they're believing it's just a guy, a rogue employee that made bets. But even if it was Ohtani making the bets, it's not that big a deal because there are so many athletes today who are gambling in different sports. I mean, it's almost encouraged the way gambling is promoted in all the sports these days.
No, I get that, and I get baseball sensitivity related to gambling on baseball. As long as he stayed away from baseball, maybe the baseball community doesn't care. But I guess what I'm not sure about is how the government is going to look at this, in the sense that, think about this. Do you believe the first story that came out on Shohei Ohtani, that he was just helping his thing and he wired it, was true? Or do you believe that the second story, that he knew nothing about it and the guy stole all the money?
I tend to believe the first one just because Ohtani is a brilliant person. I mean, whether it's marketing, his playing, very, very intelligent. It's just hard to believe that that kind of money, you're not talking about 20 or 30,000, talking about 4.5 million, would leave his account without being a red flag to somebody, whether it's him, whether it's an accountant. Somebody you would think would have to know that kind of money is leaving one of your checking accounts.
Well, look, in general, no one's really been prosecuted for gambling, the individual. Like, I'm talking in society. In California, it's still not legal, but basically every one of my people that I know in the neighborhood, they've got an offshore, this, that, the other, and nobody's been really prosecuted for that. I don't do it because I don't want to be the first guy to be prosecuted because of what I do. But it's been so decriminalized, no one's been prosecuted for that. But I think Ohtani's potential problem is that because he wired money, or may have been involved in wiring money, yes, in support of his friend, but in supporting his friend, the translator, he supported an illegal activity of the bookmaker, right? And then what are the legal ramifications? Not just of, okay, he didn't break any baseball rules, he didn't bet on baseball, and okay, so what if he bet? But the wiring of money, I mean, in the end, as you know, the Michael Vick situation, the laws that were broken were more related to the money transfer than the actual dogfighting itself in Michael Vick's case. So that might be the worry for Ohtani here. But so you're pretty much saying that from baseball's perspective, there's no link to baseball, so they're not worried about it. So I guess it's a sort of sit back and see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's a more damaging to Ohtani's brand than anything else. Such a pristine image to even be involved, and even having your best friend be involved, kind of taints it somewhat. We'll see what happens. And of course, his interpreter hasn't spoken, or interpreter's lawyers haven't spoken. So, but I mean, they're either the federal government's interested in shutting down the operation. IRS is interested, like, okay, was this a loan, or were you, like you said, funding it? Who's paying the taxes on that money? So, but I think as far as Major League Baseball itself, they're hoping just goes away, but they don't seem at the least bit concerned that Ohtani was involved, anything involving baseball gambling.
I'm sure you saw the Pete Rose comments about he should have had an interpreter.
Right. But Pete been in baseball. I mean, that's hey, if Ohtani been in baseball, you're done. So, but yeah, I'm sure puts Pete more of a thing. Say, hey, see, everybody's doing it. Baseball is involved in gambling all the time. I mean, if you're a baseball manager, you're not allowed to give out that lineup to anybody before you give it to MGM, for gamblers. So, I mean, you watch those baseball broadcasts. They're talking about the lines, who's favorite at this point, live betting. And it's the only reason in the world they're talking about having a automatic strike zone. Nothing to do with the umpires, but they want fans to be able to bet on every pitch.
Is that coming?
It's coming by the next couple of years. Yeah,
Really?
I mean, gambling's so big in football, and I think the other sports get jealous. Like, oh my God, this baseball is not going to have fantasy football, or NBA is not going to have that kind of fantasy stuff like football enjoys. But gambling is a big part of NFL's popularity.
No question. I mean, I look at it this way, Bob, it's not even gambling. It's being vested. Like, you know, if you're on the golf course, you know, that 2 foot putt, 3 foot putts, it's a gimme among friends. But if you got $5 on it or a beverage on it, then all of a sudden it becomes a knee knocker. Right. And right. I mean, it's just being vested. I remember when I started in the NFL, football is clearly the most popular sport. By the time I was done working in the league, it was bigger than all the other sports combined, it seemed. And what drove that was fantasy. In the beginning, it was, how's LT's knee? We have to beat the Raiders. By the end, it's, how's Gates' toe? He's on my fantasy team, right? The fantasy makes it, you know, you have a stake in the game, so to speak. And gambling, when if you're betting $5 or $20 or whatever on it, you now have a stake in it. And I think that potentially drives eyeballs. I mean, you care if that happens. And so I see it in all leagues, no question. All right, Bob, I know it's busy time of the year for you, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. Anything else you want to cover here today or promote or talk about? We're open.
Yeah, just a to be a fun baseball season. I do think it's wide open. You know, there's no, you know, heavy favorite. No people talk about the Dodgers, but, you know, you got teams like Atlanta. That's very good. Obviously, you know, Houston Astros, Texas Rangers once again. So it'll be fun. And today, as we're talking, today's the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's 715th home run. So it's a historic day, and just wrote about that today for USA Today. But it's fun talking to his former teammates like Dusty Baker and Ralph Garr, you know, what it was like being with Hank Aaron during that stretch.
Oh, that makes me feel old right there, because I was a kid, but I still remember that. the Dodgers bullpen pitcher catching the Al Downing catching the ball and whatever, because I grew up in LA.
Tom House caught it, Al Downing threw it. Yep.
Yeah, Al Downing threw it. Yeah, Tom. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, all right. Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate you and kicking off a great baseball season. And everyone follow Bob and all his information at USA Today. And appreciate the friendship and the time.
My pleasure. Thanks, Doctor.
All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back with part two of the Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast, where we'll do all the injury rundowns. All right. Back for part two of the Sports Injury Central Pro Football Doc podcast. Good to have Bob Nightingale on, big time national insider reporter there. Talk a little baseball here. What else we got to talk about here, Jacob?
Yeah, start of baseball always means Masters Week is around the corner too. So good news to see that Tiger agreed to participate. Hopefully he can look a little better walking around after the recent surgery. I know it's the latest in the slew of surgeries, but still getting up there. I mean, the last three majors winners have been Masters winners have been in their 20s. So Tiger's double that.
You got to give Tiger credit. Prior to Tiger Woods, I'm just saying, golfers, I really think you guys are probably too young for this, but it was an honest conversation. Was golf a skill or a sport? Because there were a lot of out of shape guys.
John Daly types,
Craig Statler types winning golf tournaments. And if you look at all the young golfers now, they're all fit.
Yeah.
V-shaped bodies, big shoulder, you know, workout guys.
Rory McIlroy,
yeah,
John Spieth,
you name it,
jacked,
and,
yeah.
And I don't think there's a really conversation anymore about is golf a sport or is it a skill? I mean, is it darts? Is it bowling? Is it billiards? No, golf is a sport, and I think Tiger was the catalyst for that.
Yeah.
But with that in mind, Tiger is approaching 50. How old is he now?
49, I believe.
I mean, a healthy Tiger Woods. Like, my hat's 48, off 48. Oh,
48. So
he's, first of all, the competition is such that it's different. Second of all, forget his foot, ankle, and other issues, and the flap, and all the surgeries, right, and now the fusion. I still think it's amazing he came back from multiple back surgeries and a fusion.
Yeah.
So I do think he's special. So we've been saying for years now, I don't see him breaking Nicholas's record. I don't see him winning another major. Still true, but it's not hating on Tiger. It's just the realities of the sport and his injuries. Look, he's going to make the cut in my mind.
I did look that up. It's minus 140 at FanDuel currently.
Minus 140.
50 people make the cut, and I think the field's at 88, 90 around there. So
I think more than 50 make the cut.
Less than half, yeah.
I think more than 50 make the cut.
50, and then whoever's tied, 450th also. So that's usually a handful more, 56, 57.
Players must be in the top 50, so counting ties. So yes.
Oh, counting ties. Yeah.
Yeah, but you have to understand there's a number of invitees,
yeah.
Former
you
gotta champions.
You got to do pretty bad in the first two rounds to miss it.
Yeah, and remember, his issue is it's a very hilly course, and he's gotten out well the first round or two, but cumulatively, unless this ankle subtalar fusion is miraculous in what he can do, I don't see him contending at the top, but I do see him making the cut.
You expect him to be wincing again like he did last year?
I was going to say, what exactly got fixed? Yeah. Like, what does it help for the durability of walking day after day, or is it just more of a comfortable everyday life?
We had an ankle fusion. I believe it to be a subtalar fusion. So it's not his full ankle joint. It's the joint just below the ankle. And where it can help him is it can get rid of pain. Where it hurts him is you lose motion. But he probably didn't have much motion there. So
he was walking to walking pain free, try to walk pain free. But
yeah. So I think it can help him. But I mean, if you just took. I mean, when's the last time he won a tournament or won a major? Or did I mean, it's been so long. If you take anyone without injury, and it's very, very difficult. Such a high-level sport. And
well, we'll be on Chew Watch because last year the big story was he was in FootJoys, not Nike's, trademark Nike. So FootJoys more added the more comfort for the specific design they gave him. So I assume he's going to still need that.
Yeah, I don't know. I would assume that that Beaverton, Oregon can design whatever shoe that he needs.
Yeah, I don't. They've had enough time, so maybe.
Who knows? I don't know. Maybe there's more to that story. Maybe, you know, his full Nike endorsement was up or something. I mean, I think they're very savvy about all that stuff.
Oh, it's all political. It's all calculated moves with the sponsors, all that. So he knows all the eyeballs that are going to be on him.
So Masters is it's interesting. I will say this: I've been lucky enough to go. I'm not a big golf fan, okay, but lucky enough to have gone to a couple of Masters. The one craziest thing is, first of all, there is zero, no cell phones. Period. And you know, you get the airport search and you have to check your phone outside the thing. So you can't take any pictures. It's much hillier than it looks on TV. Like, it is relatively hilly. That's
in greens and everything they say, all the undulations on it.
Yeah. And I'm no expert. And there's no on-course hospitality. This is not the Phoenix Open. The only on-course hospitality is the standard tents. And it's pimento cheese sandwiches, and you know, it's not the best food in the world. But I remember going with a couple of friends, get a couple of drinks, a candy bar, sandwiches. We're checking out, and they said $19. I'm making that up. I mean, it was 24. Okay, I don't know, something small.
That sounds good.
$19. I said no. I'm paying for all of them. They're like, $19. I mean, the beers are like $1.50.
Wow.
I mean, the drinks.
Yeah.
the water. I mean, the sandwiches are like $1. I mean, it's like crazy.
Wow.
I mean, the $19 or $24 or whatever it was for everyone in the park.
Jeez.
But they make up for it at the souvenir shop, where they will sell souvenirs only available there, and literally they will ship it home for you.
Oh, that's great.
Kind of thing. And that gets expensive. The souvenirs are not $19.50.
You have to buy a shirt if you go to the Masters.
I think so. They have the Masters kits you can order sent to your house too. It has all the Masters cups, the mint julep recipe or whatever. So
you have it before you go.
The people watching at home that want to feel like they're at the Masters.
Mint julep.
Sorry, no, wrong
that's,
one.
That's
wrong
Kentucky
one.
Derby.
Wrong one.
I looked at Tiger Woods last won 2019. That's when he won the Masters. He did win a championship after a smaller one. That was his 82nd. But 2019 is the last year.
How many athletes come back 5 years later?
I mean,
Phil did it. How old was Phil when he won?
His His last one?
Mid-40s.
Yeah, I should know. I actually went to that one.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the year.
Find that one. NBA is wrapping up pretty soon. Got some positive news today on Karl Anthony Towns for the Timberwolves. Optimism that he can return for the before the end of the regular season, which is 4 games left. So pretty tight timeline. But that is kind of matches what we said with his meniscus trim in early March, that he could be back for the first round of the playoffs, but won't be
100%. 50 years old for Middleton, by the way.
50.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, could hopefully they'll have him back on the court. Kind of an Embiid situation that they'll ramp him up for, so just so there's not first game doesn't come in round one of the playoffs. But
yeah, and especially for big guys, you got to get in shape. And even you have a lower extremity injury, knee injury, you got to get in shape and for the minutes. And you see Embiid has been winded.
Yeah,
he's a big fella. And Karl Anthony Towns, same thing. So knock some rust off, get going a little bit before the playoffs. Work into it round one, hopefully healthier round two. That's sort of the hope for him. So glad to see him back.
It's always interesting, the NBA playoffs too, because it's like they're a game of a day of rest in the regular season, maybe 2 days if you're lucky. And then the playoffs is like two to three days between games. They really spread it out and go until late June. So
that's why I was joking in this room about the season's about to start for the NBA. the rest of
I know Taylor's hitting props in August, yeah, but that's not a majority of the people.
Right. Well, at this point, it's difficult because, you know, like we say in football and for basketball, it's shutdown season. It's people like, okay, I'm locked into a playoff position. I'm shutting down and resting. I'm not locked in. I'm trying, or we're out of it and we're done. And yeah, it's a lot different things, but I know Sick has had a pretty good week related to basketball and some of the props and so forth, but it gets tricky.
It does
this time of year, and a lot of rest for anyone who's dinged or injured or what have you. It gets tricky. Like tonight's national championship game for basketball, men's basketball. Like Braden Smith isn't 100%, but there's no new injuries. And both teams are relatively healthy.
Yeah.
Braden Smith really being the only one. And he's played through his calf and knee.
Mm-hmm.
And just like the deeper we go into a season or a bracket or NFL playoffs, the healthy teams survive. And
off the injured teams.
Yeah, it trims off the. I mean, if we believe what we're doing, that injured teams don't advance, well, yeah, that's – so you got two healthy teams at the end. So it becomes more scheme and traditional handicapping unless there's a new injury that pops up, et cetera.
Well, we saw basketball and football, the Chiefs and Nuggets. Those were two of our healthiest teams when we did our six scores. And look, at they've won the championship.
Yeah.
So that's – yeah, that's how it works out.
Yeah, in general. But – But back to NBA basketball. How about Julius Randle?
Yeah, that's an interesting saga. I want you to say, I want you to say that if he had the surgery early when it first happened in late January, he could have been available late in the playoffs. I don't know if that's true at all, the timeline, but that's
false.
Okay. False. It's just so interesting that they like waited and like, oh, he's doing good in non-contact situations. Well, yeah, of course he's going to do that. And then the second you try to contact someone, your shoulder is going to dislocate. So just get the surgery.
Just kind of the kind of player he is.
Yeah.
And also, you can't wear a harness and play basketball.
Right.
And so that's why from the get-go, if you look at our Sick analysis, it's like, I don't know that he's coming back this season. And yet the Knicks had all this optimism. And, you know, look, in no way, shape, or form am I trying to say the Knicks don't know what they're doing. In no way, shape, or form am I trying to say their athletic trainer or their team doctor mishandled the situation. It's just how they chose to message it.
Yeah.
And they were working through keeping hope alive because they knew if he had surgery that he'd be done the rest of the season. They also knew that if he had surgery, he'd still be back for next season. So let it play out.
Yeah.
And who knows with his contract and guaranteed contracts and agents. And I'm not saying Julius Randle doesn't want to play. It may have been him saying, no, let's keep hope alive here. And let's see what happens. Let's see if I can do it. I think I can, right? It's never in no way, shape, or form am I saying that someone messed up or whatever, but it does fit what we said all along, and this is kind of what we do. We're injury analysis versus, I think everyone else out there is injury reporting. So mm-hmm. you take what the team says as gospel or the player says.
Yeah.
But there's usually more to that, and that's kind of what we try and do. And so we obviously, if you go back and look at what we said from day one, that by video, that's a shoulder dislocation and all that it means going forward. So, but the good news is excellent chance at full recovery after surgery.
It's just interesting. You have the Kings guy like Kevin Herter dislocates shoulder, and then it's like 5 days later, yep, he's undergoing surgery. But the Julius Randle gets drawn out for a couple months because of how big of a player he is, and they're going to see all the options first because they know surgery means out for the year anyways.
Yeah, but you know, there's a lot more to that, and we've talked about examples where, you know, even in my time, where the general public's like, ah, how come you didn't know what was going on? No, we knew. It just different factors
holding back some info for trade negotiations and leverage.
It's very complicated. I've always said that, and I'll say it again here: no team makes a stupid decision
right
in the moment that they make it. Nobody does. No player does. There's a lot of decisions in retrospect that end up being dumb, end up not working out.
Yeah.
But for example, no one drafts, okay, the Chargers. We didn't draft Ryan Leaf with the idea that he would be a bust. And I didn't have anything to do with that draft. I was in the draft room, but I wasn't, you know, picking. Right. At the time, I mean, if you go back to it, it was Peyton and Ryan, who's going to be one, who's going to be two.
Yeah.
And we just were unlucky being at the two.
Yeah.
And Indy picked the right guy and our pick didn't work out.
Yeah.
But at the moment, nobody said, oh, that's a dumb decision. We're not making it with the best. If you look at, don't rewrite history, right? Everyone was like, this should be the guy. And then it doesn't work out. Like if you look at all the draft picks, like, you know, when the Bears drafted Justin Fields, was it, he's not going to work out, we're going to trade him for a sixth rounder? No, it's all the writing, you know, we're expecting it to work out. Same with any situation. No team makes a dumb decision in the moment. If you think a team is making a dumb decision, you just don't have all the facts. Like, the Knicks didn't mishandle Julius Randle. We just don't have all the facts as to why they played it out the way that they played it out.
Yeah.
And there
could have been Julius Randle saying, oh, I'm going to be back. Don't worry, guys. I'm going to be back. And then
could have been.
Yeah.
Yes. And don't do it. And we've talked about it in San Diego, the Tatis story and his shoulder dislocation. We referenced it earlier with Trevor Story, you know, in his shoulder dislocation. So there's a lot of factors that come into this. So not besmirching the Knicks or their medical staff at all.
Beast of the week. Is it everybody involved in that hockey WrestleMania brawl? WrestleMania on ice that happened right when the puck dropped?
I saw that. The retweets and everything. I don't know what to make of that in the sense that, yeah, I've worked hockey, but I don't have as much hockey and NHL experience as other sports. There is no comp in sports. I was thinking about that. Except for one, if you call it sports. And yes, I've worked WWE matches before, and we just had WrestleMania this weekend, and I saw that Kelsey and all these
Lane Johnson was there.
Yeah. Lane Johnson in the same ring, well, I guess on the same side with Rey Mysterio, which, by the way, yes, it's public knowledge. I've done surgery on Rey Mysterio, Mr. 619, etc. So the only comp I can say is Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
But it's like
just everybody,
everyone at the same time. WrestleMania Royal Rumble. I mean, that was hockey Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
From the drop of the puck, you know, kind of deal. Obviously, you don't even have enough referees to do it. Stop, but it, yeah. I don't know. I mean, you're a big hockey guy. You like that stuff. I don't know. I just
think it's a big, it can change the momentum in the game. Mm-hmm. I just don't, in the beginning of the game like that, I don't know, like, there had to be something set up, because like in the middle of the game, if you're losing, you get in a fight, then maybe it changes the way you play after, but I don't, at the beginning of the game, I'm not seeing how.
I mean, we had Dave Stewart on.
Yeah.
Okay.
He talked about the evening the score with the other team. You got beef coming in, stuff like that.
But when you hit a guy with a pitch, at least you're within the realm
right.
of the game. Oh, it's a pitch ball that did or like didn't get away with little, you.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
I mean, just dropping gloves, I guess you could argue that's part of hockey, but I don't know. It's just an interesting phenomenon. Like NFL, why are there not more fights in the NFL?
Well, the helmet's on. You're not going to throw much punch. Not going to do much if you're throwing punches.
You throw break punches your hand. And you break your hand and you're going to get ejected.
Yeah.
You can't take your helmet off.
Yeah.
And you got the face mask.
Unless you're Myles Garrett and you can swing it at Mason Rudolph, but that was a rare case.
Yeah, but you get what I mean? Whereas hockey, literally, if you wanted to, okay, they don't have face masks on it. Most of them don't.
No. They got team dentists, though.
They do have team dentists, but I mean, you could simply say you can't drop your gloves.
Yeah. That's what the NBA does with the don't leave the bench area or else you're going to get suspended. They don't want full brawls going on after the Malice in the Palace.
That's true. But I've been saying this about basketball, but even the NFL. The problem is, what happens if it happens in your bench area?
Yeah.
That's going to lead to a lot. But anyways, that Royal Rumble NHL, it's interesting. But it was interesting how there were certain guys that were ready to fight and wanted to, certain guys that were just doing it because they felt like they had to.
Most of them do not want to fight.
No.
That's not their game. There's always like maybe three or four people and a couple stars are tough, but like you see a little winger fighting in that. That's just because he saw everybody else doing it. He's got to do it as well. Pressure.
That's my favorite part of baseball fights is the bullpen guys got to run all the way out from right field, and then by the time they're there, it's like, oh, I guess we can't fight now. It's already done. Like, they didn't want to run out there. They're keeping warm.
Well, that's the interesting factor. The reason why baseball is difficult is if you got an altercation on the field, one guy's outnumbered.
Yeah.
And so then, right? And so that's what leads to the bench clearing. This, that, the other. But baseball, I mean, they don't want to fight, right?
No.
I mean, there's one.
There's a lot of hold me back.
Yeah. That hockey one was that. But from the first puck drop, boom, let's go. So that's an interesting deal. But not directly my world, but I don't know. I'm torn with it. I mean, people say it drives ratings, but
right.
I don't know. I'd rather have it be like Dave Stewart and taking care of the game, like a hard check and something or other, or you know,
that's what as to... a hard check. The initial reaction should be a fight. You know what I mean? But you're right though. It should be hard check, hard check, hard check. But when you get the star player, hard check equals you have to answer for that.
Yeah. Now I got to defend my guy because he got clean hit, hard check.
Nothing. But you see people start fights after clean hits all the time. You hit the guy too hard.
Well, there's guys that are specifically supposed to fight enforcers, and be the big bruisers hitting people and fighting.
On the line too. So like you can't get your fighter usually. So if it happens and there's star players on there, they'll do it the next line. They'll put the line fighters out.
Right.
And it's just on the fly. If you have star players fighting.
Star players. Yeah, that's true.
All right. What else we got this week? Anything else?
I think that wraps it up. Staying up on the baseball insights is always hard early in the season because guys are going down, soft tissue injuries and all these pitchers blowing out. Going out elbows, so
coming up too, right?
Yeah,
and what else we have? Football,
NFL drafts ramping up soon. We've got
drafts around the corner. Recheck combines are probably about now. I've lost track.
Yeah, I think so.
Medical stuff. So Caleb Williams, interesting. So one visit. So he only asked to do one physical for the Bears.
Uh-huh.
You know. There you go. So that's probably a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
It worked out in the end there. He only has to do one physical.
Yes, he only has to do one visit.
Caleb Williams to the Bears. That's good. All right. Thanks again. Masters, NCAA championships, basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball stuff. Yes, I'm back. We had a one-week hiatus. I was in London and Paris with the family. And yes, Davis ate a snail.
Escargot. Wow.
Escargot.
he doesn't eat anything. He's picky, but he wanted his €5.
You had to bribe him.
I was just trying to goad him on to try something. He said €5. I was like, done. I mean, you need a better agent. I would have gone a lot higher.
So my family does neon trips, you know.
But here's the thing. I didn't realize this. I mean, I've had escargot before. You guys have had escargot?
Yeah.
No, I have not. I've had shark.
You wouldn't have escargot. But what I didn't fully appreciate, like in the U.S., most times if you have escargot, it's in this little butter sauce and it's already deshelled.
Yeah.
But everywhere in Paris, it's in the snail shell.
Yeah.
So you have to like dig it out. I thought that would stop him, but he actually did it.
Wow. Kudos. <That's awesome. laughs> Less picky than Taylor already.
Oh, well, he's picky, but he's definitely less picky than Taylor. He complains about it. But of course, the wife doesn't watch the podcast and listen, but I've been telling her like, yeah, he's picky, but this proves that he's not that picky, that he will eat it. If he gets away with saying, I'm not eating it,
yeah,
then he's going to continue. If you say, this is all you have, he'll eat it. He, for €5, he ate a snail. I mean,
not even that much. He probably
had
a lot of euros.
I would have thought he was going to say no, renege on it. Because I think in the beginning, when I said escargot, I don't think he realized it was a snail.
You knew what it was immediately, though, when you said it?
No, I don't think he did.
Oh, okay. No. And then it comes and he's like, what's in the shell?
Then I started saying, you sure you're going to do it? And then at that point, he took a stance already. So he wanted to continue.
Follow up in his word.
Follow up that he was going to do it. But then, of course, everywhere you go, it comes in a shell. And he didn't. I don't know.
Huh? Kind of like oysters.
Well, langua. You say langua. You don't realize it's cow tongue coming out?
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't chop it up.
Yeah.
He doesn't. Oysters.
He doesn't do seafood either.
He's never had an oyster
either.
So. His twin sister will try anything once.
No.
But anyways, so that was our 1 week hiatus, but we're back for the rest of the spring/summer every week here. Thanks for listening and watching, and we'll see you next week.